You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Farah. One day, a Milwaukee man painted three words in giant letters on his roof as a way to greet passengers about to land at Mitchell International Airport. The words, "Welcome to Cleveland." 40-some years later, he's got some stories to share, and you'll hear them coming up. First, 8 months into the COVID-19 vaccination effort, the gaps among different racial and ethnic groups in Wisconsin are narrowing. Since June, the rate of Asian, Hispanic, American Indian, and Black residents getting vaccinated has been higher than among white people. In part, that's the result of focused outreach to some minority communities in places like free health clinics and literacy classes for immigrants. Shemaine Mills reports.
For months now, health officials have aimed their efforts at those who want the vaccine or are on the fence.
And we're talking about what we call the unvaccinated but willing. So we're not looking at anti-vaxxers or folks that talk about conspiracy theories and will never have their position changed. We are looking at individuals that for logistical reasons or they haven't been approached in the right manner have not yet gotten access to the vaccine.
That's Joe Agoda, whose nonprofit Sustento is working with 100 free and charitable clinics across 15 states, including Wisconsin. One of them is HealthNet in Rock County. That's where Yolanda Orozco Arellano got vaccinated against COVID-19. The clinic's flexible hours allowed her to get both shots without missing work as a hotel housekeeper in Janesville, where she lives after moving to Wisconsin from Oaxaca, Mexico.
En la mañana. Y pues a veces sí había horario, como en la tarde.
She works in the morning and she came in the afternoon to get her vaccine here at the clinic.
That's Yolanda's case manager and one of the clinic's interpreters, Alicia Alvarado. She relates how Yolanda wanted to get the vaccine, even though she has other family and friends who were too scared to get a shot, some wrongly believing a myth that involves implanting a microchip, a persistent falsehood that health officials encounter. Yolanda got a shot as soon as she was able. The clinic helped overcome the three T's that HealthNet CEO Ian Hedges says can prevent people from getting vaccinated: transportation, time off, and trust.
For years, healthcare institutions, city governments were maybe not proactively making those relationships. And so when they opened up to the vaccines and then provided maybe some additional resources, and then they said, well, why are folks not coming? Well, it's because those relationships weren't there. That trust wasn't there.
In terms of who people trust, the list often includes their doctor, family members, and teachers, like Marie Simpson, who helps immigrants learn commonly used phrases that may be difficult to understand.
The first one is book a flight. Book a flight. What does that mean, to book a flight?
Buy plane ticket.
Yes, it means to buy a plane ticket.
For adults learning English as a second language, the bond between student and teacher can be tight because groups like the Literacy Network in Dane County are providing a key skill for those seeking a better life. People like 29-year-old Miguel Marquez, who fled Venezuela to escape poverty and the government of Hugo Chavez. In his literacy class, Miguel also learned about the COVID-19 vaccine, which he didn't think he needed because he was young and healthy. He changed his mind after seeing younger people being hospitalized, some dying.
In that moment, I knew that, oh, that's bad. It's happening. It's actually happening.
Wisconsin is seeing a surge in new infections and hospitalizations driven by the more contagious Delta variant of COVID-19. There's been an uptick in people getting vaccinated, too. In early July, Wisconsin was averaging less than 5,500 new vaccinations per week. That weekly average is now close to 7,500. Health officials say the Delta variant is giving a new urgency to efforts to reach unvaccinated populations. Now that Marquez is protected against COVID-19, he can't understand why some Americans are refusing the vaccine. He says people in his homeland are begging for shots that are hard, if not impossible, to get, often the same vaccine that some Americans don't want. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, the FDA this week gave full approval to the COVID-19 vaccine from Pfizer and BioNTech. It had previously been given emergency authorization for vaccinating people. Meanwhile, only about half of Wisconsin's population is fully vaccinated, and COVID-19 deaths and new cases are the highest they've been since about the beginning of this year when vaccines weren't widely available yet. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you just recently been vaccinated? What was the experience like? What led you to do it now if you'd been putting it off? Is the full regular approval now of one of the vaccines a game changer, you think, for you or maybe someone you know who's been hesitant under the emergency authorization? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. William Hartman is an anesthesiologist at UW Health and an assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's medical director for the UW Health Pre-Anesthesia Assessment Clinic. Dr. Hartman, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
What does this full approval of the Pfizer vaccine mean? What goes into this process of this regular authorization now?
So to get full approval, it really brings the evaluation process to a much larger scale. And so when emergency use authorization was permitted for Pfizer and for Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, they looked at the clinical trials, so about 40,000 people per trial, and were able to assess the data for the first month, 2 months of that trial to determine safety and efficacy. Now they've had full six-month follow-up data to look at for safety and efficacy. Plus, they can open it up and look at any of the data from the millions, if not billions, of people that have been inoculated worldwide to assess safety and efficacy, make sure that it remains consistent throughout the different parts of the world and as exposure to different variants has occurred. What they've seen is that with the Pfizer vaccine, it's still about 91% effective in preventing COVID infection, despite all these variants, despite being different places in the world. That's an excellent, excellent vaccine. And it's without question, was an easy decision, I believe, for the FDA to give it full approval.
Now, one response I've seen is, what took so long? Why did the FDA take this much time to give this regular approval? Is that just how this process works?
Well, usually it takes a while longer, actually. This was an expedited review that the FDA did for Pfizer. And so the fact that they were able to devote so much manpower and so many resources to looking at just this vaccine allowed the process to actually move more quickly than how it normally would. Typically, the process takes at least 10 months after years-long trials of vaccines or medicines. And so while it does seem, especially in the middle of a pandemic, that things take a long time to happen, it happened as expeditiously as it probably could.
And the opposite response I've heard, too, especially from those skeptical of the vaccine promotion effort in general, including Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, is, hey, wait, this was rushed. Should we worry that the process took a little longer than the normal process, or took a little less time, I should say, than the process would usually take?
No, because, you know, as someone who's participated in these clinical trials too, I know the scrutiny that went into these. And as the trials for these vaccines occurred, we still used the same number of participants that we would have if it was a 3-year trial. We just didn't have the time period to do that. And so we had the same amount of people. We devoted more resources so that we could collect the data and get it interpreted more quickly. But no corners were cut. These were very, very solid clinical trials. And I think people should have every confidence in these vaccines.
One big question now as we go back to school is there's still a big population that can't get any vaccines, 12 and under kids. You are actually working, I understand, on one of the vaccine trials for the 12 and unders. What is different about that process? Why are we taking longer to be sure we can use this for kids?
So the kids... initially, the trials have to focus on finding what's the right dose of the vaccine to give the children. And that takes some time because you scale it down from the adult dose and you have to figure out what the maximum effect is with the most minimum dose to give to a child. And so that takes some time to wade through those issues. Those both for Pfizer and Moderna are still ongoing to some extent, but at least for the 5-year-old or 6-year-old to 12-year-old group, they seem to have settled on doses, and it's allowed us to now move into efficacy and safety trials of these vaccines in this age group of 6 to 12-year-olds. And so hopefully we'll have that data assembled within the next month and a half or 2 months so that it can be interpreted and we can have shots going into kids' arms sometime around mid-December.
We're talking about the latest COVID-19 news, especially related to vaccines, with Dr. William Hartman, anesthesiologist at UW Health, assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the latest vaccine news? Now the regular standard approval of the Pfizer vaccine, part of that, vaccines for kids. What precautions are you taking out there, whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated? And do you see this full approval maybe nudging vaccine acceptance in your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Dr. William Hartman, anesthesiologist at UW Health, assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. We're looking at FDA full approval for the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, the latest in case numbers and new vaccine trials. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions and comments. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller now. Daryl is with us in Germantown. Daryl, hi.
Hello. I just wanted to say that for me, I already got vaccinated a long time ago, and I had no adverse effects except for a sore arm for a few hours. And it's just very frustrating to hear over and over again that people are so skeptical about getting something that's good for them. And it's also very frustrating to hear people like Ron Johnson out there with these false narratives about the danger of the vaccine. He would do the state a lot of good if he resigned from office, because he really needs some mental help.
Daryl, thanks for the call. Dr. Hartman, I want to steer into the politics here, but as we heard in our feature earlier, there are a lot of different reasons that people haven't gotten vaccines yet, from being skeptical or opposed to them to access and convenience. Can you talk about what you see as the key to getting more vaccines out there to people?
Well, I do think that one of the keys was to get full approval for the vaccines. In a recent Kaiser Family Foundation poll, 30% of unvaccinated people said that the reason that they were still hesitant or resistant to the vaccine was that it still hadn't been given full approval by the FDA. So that's been done now. And so these people are green-lighted then to go ahead and get that vaccine into their arm. In terms of, you know, other things that other pressures that people are under in terms of getting the vaccine, you know, it's really two pandemics right now, the pandemic of the unvaccinated and pandemic caused by misinformation. And so we're just doing our best to get as accurate and as good of information out there to everybody so that people have access to really make the best decisions for themselves. Obviously, we feel that the best decision for anybody is to get vaccinated, because that prevents you from getting severe disease, hospitalization, and death from COVID-19.
And I wonder if the mental calculus has changed for people with the Delta variant, Dr. Hartman. Just to, you know, earlier this year, numbers so far down, hospitalizations so far down, people might have thought, we're out of the woods now. If I hadn't gotten vaccinated, maybe I don't need to now. Do you think that Delta is maybe, and the hospitalizations we're seeing in so many states now, that that's turning up the urgency for people again?
I think so. And it's unfortunate that it has to come to a variant like this that to cause people to go and get that vaccine. But even in Wisconsin, the most recent numbers, you know, 1,417 new confirmed COVID-19 cases, 7 new deaths here in Wisconsin in the last day. And so that the numbers continue to go up at levels that we haven't seen since January. And that's solely because of this highly transmissible form of COVID-19 known as the Delta variant. You know, as things opened up a little bit and people loosened their masks and the restrictions in the towns, which is good. It people needed a break, I think, for a while, but it's time now that we sort of buckle things back up a little bit, especially within our own homes, so that we can get past this Delta variant. In the meantime, get people vaccinated as much as possible so that we can really put this virus in the rearview mirror.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Dave is on the line in Onalaska. Dave, hi.
Hi. Personally, I'm just amazed at people from my generation. I'm in my mid-60s and older that are skeptical of it. And I just, how can they not remember all the diseases that were around when we were kids that, you know, we kind of took for granted back then, but, you know, there wasn't any cure. And then when there was, you know, we don't see scarlet fever or so many of those diseases anymore that used to be here. And I guess that's what I wanted to say. It just amazes me that the general public can think that they're so smart. I mean, do you grill your surgeon before you, you know, give him a test before he does surgery on you? You got to have some faith in the system.
Dave, thanks for the call. And do you, Dr. Hartman, point toward the past success of smallpox inoculation, which actually eliminated that disease, polio vaccinations, and other successful campaigns?
Well, you have to look at those and see that vaccines worked, and vaccines came about because there were dangerous viruses that were hurting and killing people. That's the same thing that's happening here. I think one of the big differences between now and then is the presence of social media and the ease with which misinformation can spread and how quickly it can spread. And then it becomes very difficult to contain and very difficult to contest. People, you know, who put out some of these misinformation campaigns, they are very convincing. And I found myself even looking things up sometimes. And so I can understand why people would be swayed by these misinformation campaigns. But the fact of the matter is, as a person who's been in this fight, as a person who's been in the middle of these trials with a couple of vaccines now, these are safe, these are effective, and these are the best way to keep you out of harm's way from COVID-19.
Thanks for that call. Dr. Hartman, one success story, vaccination of people 65 and up. I can't remember the total rate for Wisconsin, but there are some counties where they're reporting 99% vaccine rates for people 65 and up. In many ways, we've gotten the message to the people who are the most vulnerable, right?
And that was initially the entire goal, was to protect the most vulnerable people in our society. And I think that we did do a very good job of that in nationwide, but especially here in Wisconsin. And I know that people in nursing homes work tirelessly to make sure that their residents were protected, because no one wanted to see another person pass away from this virus. And, you know, the images that came out of Italy and New York and Seattle early in this pandemic, they scared people, but they also motivated people. I hope we never have to look at those types of images again. I hope that these surges now don't result in deaths like what we saw earlier in the pandemic. But I do hope that people truly take it seriously. This pandemic is not over. This virus is still a killer. And it's still infecting way too many people. And again, the best way to protect yourself is to get this vaccine in your arm.
Time for one more caller. Abby is with us in East Troy. Abby, hi.
Hi. Hi. I've got a question about the FDA approval process. You mentioned earlier about the 3 years that a normal FDA approval takes. and I'm curious to know how the long-term effects of the vaccine were studied, and if they weren't, how that justification comes through then with the approval anyways.
Abby, thanks for the call. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Dr. Hartman, can you expand on that a little?
So typically the clinical trials themselves are what take the amount of time. It usually to get a 40,000 participant trial, it would take 3 years to recruit into that. And so it takes that much time to get enough participants and enough of a sample size of people so that we can study efficacy and safety. Here, we were able to recruit people much more quickly than really ever before. There was a bunch of heroes that raised their hand and were first in line so that they could test and make sure that these vaccines do work and that they are safe. And the platforms on which these vaccines have been made, both the mRNA and the adenovirus vaccines, these aren't brand new. They've been around 10, 15 years, and they've been studied in other entities. So the only thing that changes in these vaccines really is the, you know, taking out whatever they were making a vaccine for before and putting in the spike protein for the coronavirus. And so these, in terms of long-term studies, in terms of the vectors that have been used, and we have that data. We know that this is a safe process. No, of course, you know, this virus has only been around for 2 years, so we don't have long-term data on these particular vaccines. But what we do know is how they work, and we do know that the safety profile in billions of people worldwide continues to be remarkable.
Dr. Hartman, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. William Hartman is an anesthesiologist at UW Health and an assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He works on vaccine trials also. We talked to him today about some of the latest national and state pandemic news, including full FDA approval of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. Coming up, we'll talk with a Milwaukee resident who painted "Welcome to Cleveland" on his rooftop back in the 70s and the stories he has heard about his practical joke. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll mark back to school season with your favorite class of all time from kindergarten to college. Now, let's say you're flying into Milwaukee for the first time and you're looking forward to getting on the ground and going about your business. You're approaching the runway at Mitchell International Airport. You look out the window and the black rooftops below, and then you see a message in big white letters on one of them: "Welcome to Cleveland." What? Are you on the wrong plane? Did the pilot make a wrong turn? Are you dreaming? No, you're good. You're just the latest recipient of a 43-year-old practical joke. The mastermind behind all this is a photographer from Milwaukee named Mark Gubin. He's gotten a lot of attention for his effort. I talked to him earlier today.
Well, take us back to your original whim to paint "Welcome to Cleveland" on your Milwaukee rooftop.
Oh, it was 1978, and I was up there, I think it was a Wednesday, and my secretary and I were having lunch up there, and we watched these planes come over, and I'm on the final approach for runway 19 for Mitchell Field, and their flaps were 45 degrees, and the wheels were down, and it was sounded like the end of the world. And I thought, well, they can all see us here in the roof, too. And my secretary said we should put a big welcome sign, "Welcome to Milwaukee." And I thought, well, no. Why don't we put something else there, like "Welcome to Cleveland," because it's such a hard world out there. People need to smile a little bit. And it sort of went, obviously, this was before viral, but went viral later, but has been coming back every year all the time by all kinds of radio, TV, newspaper things around the world. And I'm happy, I guess, that it has, because it does make people smile, which we need that these days. That's pretty much it. There was no practical reason in the world for doing it, and that's probably why I did it. And my son at the time, who was maybe 5 or 6 years old, we were always complaining about the roof and how noisy it was. And he said, why don't we just spray for those planes? I thought, a five-year-old would think of that, but that doesn't work.
Now, have you heard from airline passengers who have seen your rooftop in the last 40-plus years, if they were confused?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, one of the airlines that leaves from Denver stops in Milwaukee and goes on to Cleveland. They always announce on the plane, ladies and gentlemen, this is really Milwaukee. It's not Cleveland. And sometimes they announce it for everybody who's sitting on the port side of the plane, because that's about where they would see it. Look out your window and you'll see a big sign that's 50 feet long that says, welcome to Cleveland. And I don't think it's hurt anybody per se. Nobody got off thinking it was Cleveland that I'm aware of. Maybe they did. Maybe they started looking around for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and realized they were the wrong place.
They're probably better off ending up in Milwaukee anyway. So right. 1978, have you had to touch up the paint over the years?
Yes, we tend to do that every 2 or 3 years, because following that, the city of Milwaukee had a meeting for most of the day. You'd think they'd have other things to do, saying it was a misleading sign and that should be illegal. And my attorney, who also got a kick out of it, he said, well, they can't change it now because that's called, he had a Latin phrase, ex post facto. it's grandfathered in, but if you go 50 miles an hour on a street that they changed 25, but you went there the day earlier, they can't arrest you for it. He said, if you just keep that up there, as long as you don't take it down or make it so bad that it just has to come down, you could probably leave it indefinitely.
If I was to buy the building next door to you and paint Welcome to Cleveland on it, I might get into trouble.
I guess you would. It's interesting that municipalities and cities and all that don't have the same sense of humor about that in themselves. They're doing their job, I guess, and I suppose if I started out in Denver, never been to Cleveland or Milwaukee, I would be a little distracted by it.
And you mentioned that this story pops up again and again. Media people like us here at Public Radio call you up. It comes and goes in waves. Is that what you've seen over the years?
It has been. Last week I did a thing. Let's see. One was from the Chicago newspaper TV station kind of thing, and another week before that Perth, Australia, some guy there thought it would be, with his heavy accent I couldn't quite understand what they were saying, it'd be sort of fun for him to do this welcome to Perth when he was actually in I don't know what city it was, and he credited me, which is interesting. So that it has gone all the way around the world many, many, many times. But after I did it, I never thought it'd be too much of anything.
And now this is a whimsical art project on your roof, and I understand you're a photographer. Do you have that kind of sense of whimsy, goofiness, whatever you want to call it, in some of your work?
I did, in the mere fact that for years I did magazine photography, and they always wanted something different, and I had this weird imagination for coming up with something different. And I guess, too, I travel an awful lot, and I did then. Now I'm retired and old. I was a young man when I did this, and it was that I landed in so many cities, and I always just noticed all their roofs, and that was my first exposure to the city, and so I just would think about that kind of thing. I guess there was no practical reason for doing it initially, and maybe that's why I wanted to do it, because everything had to be practical in my world. And yet I realized later this made everybody smile, which was wonderful. So that was the way of it.
And so you created this over 40 years ago. And as you say, it makes people smile. It's got people talking about it still. Can you leave us with some encouragement for the rest of us to try, I don't know, bringing a little bit of that weird magic into our lives, whatever artistic form that might take?
I would think, I've thought of things like when I'm sometimes driving into a city, instead of it saying Milwaukee and then the population, we could say something like, ah, yes, Milwaukee. just that kind of thing of, I think we need all that kind of stuff. If I look at the news, it's mostly pretty hard and depressing. And I'm 78 now, so that most things I care so little about one way or the other because I'm old. Coming in for my final approach, I guess, if I'm thinking about airplanes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here in Cleveland. I appreciate it.
Okay. Good luck.
You too.
Mark Gubin is a photographer in Milwaukee. We talked to him about why he painted Welcome to Cleveland in giant letters on his roof way back in 1978, the stories of surprised passengers flying in overhead, and the media attention he's gotten over the decades. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Producer Carl Christensen brings us a story about a nighttime hunt for a strange creature wandering the streets of Eau Claire.
Was it a badger? Was it a bobcat? Or was it just an abnormally large, trash-eating house cat? Author B.J. Hollers tells the story of his family's urban tracking expedition in search of the Beast of the East Hill.
Had Jeff DeGrave simply seen a badger on Badger Avenue, it would have made a lot more sense. Yet what he saw on that November night was a creature that seemed far bigger and more dangerous than that. For the 10 seconds in which it loped past his headlights, Jeff observed an animal larger and faster and far more feline than any old badger. That's insane, Jeff thought as he peered out his car's windshield. What kind of house cat's as big as a golden retriever? The answer is no house cat. What Jeff had seen, or thought he had seen, was a new visitor to Eau Claire's East Hill neighborhood. It was about 7:30 at night, so it was dark, Jeff recounted. And this cat comes, I wouldn't say racing, but certainly at a pretty good pace. From left to right, the creature crossed Badger Avenue, never slowing to acknowledge Jeff or the car. It was basically a perfect profile, Jeff said, probably 15 feet from the headlights. Plenty close, he said, to note the golden brown coloring and dappled spots of a bobcat. And just how sure are you about what you saw? I asked him. Well, I am 100% sure that it was not a house cat, Jeff said. And I'm also 100% sure it was a cat, which significantly narrowed our options. 15 minutes after receiving the tip, I reached out to a journalist friend who confirmed that he too had recently been contacted about a bobcat sighting near East Hill's Boyd Park. I'd heard enough. Wasting no time, I reached for my binoculars, preparing to strike out in search of the beast. But because it's not every day one goes on a bobcat hunt, my family demanded to come along. But it might not be safe, I tried. My wife, whose confidence in my bobcat tracking skills can best be described as no confidence, assured me they'd be fine. I loaded our brood into the minivan, then prepped the children on what we were in search of. A creature bigger than a house cat and smaller than a cougar. What's a house cat? My daughter asked. What's a cougar? Asked my son. Sighing, I drove us all into the dark. What began as a somewhat serious expedition to uncover the region's rare fauna soon devolved into a nighttime playdate at the park. After half an hour of underdogs on the swings, the bobcat, unsurprisingly, remained undetected. Though my half-baked bobcat hunt yielded little, that hardly means one isn't around. I wouldn't be all that surprised by a bobcat sighting, Wisconsin DNR wildlife biologist Terry Sherratt told me in the days following my hunt. As we encroach more and more on wildlife, they realize that we don't pose much of a threat. And then they find that there are some advantages to being around us, too. Terry's talking about food, how one person's trash is a bobcat's ready-made meal. It's worth noting, too, that the Chippewa Valley is well within the bobcat's native range, and, in recent years, has made a comeback. Of course, bobcats know nothing of comebacks or boundaries either. They go where their stomachs lead them. As they encroach upon our terrain, we might remember that we encroached upon theirs first, that the return, on occasion, to offer us a glimpse of the unseen world is more than we deserve. A reminder that we are, as Wisconsin conservationist Aldo Leopold once wrote, only a fellow voyager with other creatures. If one day we are lucky enough to glimpse a bobbed tail in the headlights, let us respond not with horror, but humility. Not with a shout or a scream, but a whisper. Hello, old friend. Welcome home.
BJ Hollers is a writer and assistant professor at University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Carl Christensen.
Coming up, it's back to school season. What is the best class you've ever taken? In school, a community program, college course, whatever, you can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll take your calls coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now it's back to school time for students of all ages, and that got us wondering, what was your favorite class in school? Any level, any topic, school, or maybe a community enrichment program, you name it, call in now with your favorite class ever at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. What was your favorite class ever? What did you love about it? Did something stick with you to this day? Was it the topic? Was it the teacher? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We have already heard from a lot of you over on Facebook. Let's share a couple of those to kick things off. Brandy writes, the favorite class was orchestra. Brandy says, all the way from 5th grade to 12th grade, there are a lot of studies showing the benefits of music. I can confirm those results anecdotally anyway, Brandy tells us. On my list of favorite classes, I'd have to put jazz band in high school. I was in the concert band, symphonic band and things like that. But as a saxophonist, jazz band is where you really got to shine. And I got a lot of practice and lessons that I still use to this day. How about you share your class, your favorite ever, at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Ella is with us in Wausau. Ella, hi.
Hi.
What's your class, Ella?
Reading class.
What did you read in that class?
Just books and stuff. It was really fun.
Okay, what grade are we talking about here?
Sixth grade.
Okay. Was there a favorite book, or did it get you into a particular author or style of book?
There's this book called Hatchet, and it was really good.
Hatchet. I'll have to look that up. Ella, thank you so much for getting us started at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Jan in Sherwood. Jan, hi.
Well, hi. I hope you can hear me okay.
Loud and clear.
Good. So the most wonderful class I took was at Marion University when I went back to complete my BSN of nursing, and it was about power leadership versus servant leadership. Mm. And it was just fascinating to me because I've been a nurse for 45 years, and I already knew these things, but to have it spelled out in detail and how it's best for a person to live their life as a servant leader, it just really struck a chord within me. And I have dealt with so many managers and people over my career. And, wow, it was just so interesting.
Jen, I've talked to people on the show about servant leadership from Wisconsin here in the past. Were you able to take that and use it in your daily work?
Well, I already did use it.
Okay.
Because I'm by heart, I'm a servant leader. But I've dealt with people who are not servant leaders all the time. And it was like, oh, okay, so this explains so much to me that I knew in my head, but I had never actually taken a class that talked about it and looked at the past, like Martin Luther King and looking at World War II and World War I and the servant leaders versus the power leaders within all the terrible wars we've had. And I'm like, wow. That is just so fascinating.
Fascinating. I love it, Jan. Thank you so much for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. It is back to school season. We want to hear from you. What is your favorite, most memorable, best class you've ever taken? Any level, any venue? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to some of our Facebook comments now. Adrian tells us biology was that class. Adrian says it became my major in college. My favorite discipline is ecology. I ponder on the natural world every day. We live outside the house as much as in. It's a way of life, literally, and from the root word bios. Thanks so much for sharing that. I wish I'd done better in biology classes because I love the material. I'm very bad at identifying things. We dissected a lot of stuff back in those days, and man, was I terrible at that. So biology was kind of a roadblock. Joel also liked biology. Joel said, my interest in biology led to a 32-year career as a physician, from which I'm now retired. Well, that's a great start. How about you? Your favorite class ever? Call in at 800-642-1234. Connie joins us now in Portage. Connie, hi. Oop, are you there, Connie? Oh, we lost Connie. Connie, I guess, said an anatomy and physiology class was Connie's favorite. All right. Well, how about you? 800-642-1234 is the number to call with your favorite class ever. That's 800-642-1234. Well, a lot of you liked sharing on Facebook more than calling, apparently. Still time for your call, though, at 800-642-1234. Deborah writes on Facebook, I was lucky enough in high school to be part of a new thing they were trying out called humanities. They integrated four fields of study, philosophy, art, music, and history into one umbrella class. We studied all the disciplines during the same time period in history. That sounds pretty cool. I would take that class, Deborah. Thanks for sharing that. John says math. John says that led to a career in business and corporate finance. Math class. Cool. Cheryl on Facebook says choir was the favorite class. Cheryl said, ultimately, I became a music teacher. Wow, we're getting a lot of people who took their favorite class and ended up making a career out of it. That's pretty cool. Calls coming in now, slowly but surely. You could join in at 800-642-1234. We've got Margaret with us in Milwaukee. Margaret, hi.
Hi. My favorite class was an English class taught by a teeny tiny nun named Sister Jeroma Johnson. And she was not 5 feet tall, and she was a powerhouse. And she just taught wonderfully well. And I'm on the radio right now.
Yeah, you've got your radio up there, Margaret, but thank you so much for sharing that. I love it. And your English still sounds pretty good to me, so I guess the class worked. Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Taking your favorite classes ever. Let's go to Owen now in Green Bay. Owen, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to share my favorite class, which I took at UW Stevens Point. It was called American Indian Philosophies. We spoke about the metaphysics of our American tribes that we share and have taken land from. And we focused on ways that we can improve our relationships with the land and by extension ourselves.
That sounds pretty cool, Owen. Thanks for sharing that. Time for another caller or two. Samantha is with us in Boyceville. Samantha, hi.
Hi. My favorite class actually was one I took at UW Eau Claire through the honors program, and it was called History of Horror.
Ooh. So books, movies, all of the above?
All of the above, actually. It was really fun getting to kind of delve deeper into Dracula, actually.
Yeah, is there one you'd recommend in particular that we all should read and or watch?
Definitely. Dracula's one.
Oh, Dracula's it. Okay, yeah, that's a pretty good one. That sounds like a great class. Cy is with us now in Hudson. Cy, what's your class?
The class I took a psych class in high school that led to me taking several more psychology classes in college. That led me into education and education leadership. The best part, though, was I ended my career by training and then running a business teaching emotional intelligence techniques, how to understand your emotions, where they come from, and how to regulate your reaction to things in life.
Cool. Sai, thank you so much for sharing that. Thanks to everyone who shared your favorite class. If you have it, still time over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up next is news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then we'll find out what's ahead for Democrats' infrastructure plans after the House passed the $3.5 trillion budget outline along party lines yesterday. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.